Before I call the first case, we have some high school students here, and my notes say they're from Union Grove High School. If that's the case, would you and your advisors please stand? Oh, that's wonderful. Good group. Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here with a program that the court runs in combination with the State Bar of Wisconsin called Court with Class. And they receive some information about the case and then learn a little bit more about it and hear oral argument. At the break after the second case this morning, one of the justices, and today it's Justice David Prosser, will come and talk to the students a little bit about the process of the Supreme Court, how cases get here, and whatever other pearls he wants to pass along. So with that introduction from our looking at the students, let me introduce the court to the students. On my far right, Justice Michael Gableman. Next to him, Justice David Prosser. Next to me, Justice Shirley Abrahamson. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. Next to me, on my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. On her left, Justice Annette Ziegler. And on the far left, Justice Rebecca Bradley. So, with all of those introductions, are you ready to go? Okay, please proceed.
May it please the court. I am Attorney Michael Rosenberg. I represent Eric Loomis on this case, which is here on certification, as this court knows, from the Court of Appeals. The issue on certification is whether or not trial courts can rely and use COMPAS, which stands for Correctional Offender Management Profiling, for alternative sanctions in considering a sentence of a defendant. It is our argument in brief that it should not be used by the trial court.
Counsel, not be used for any purpose or not be used for, are you making a differentiation for the question of whether there should be incarceration, and if so, the length of it, or what if a circuit court judge found it helpful to determining the treatment needs of the offender?
We are only arguing it should not be used for whether or not the person should or should not be incarcerated, and whether or not what the length of the sentence should be.
I guess one of the questions that came to my mind when I was preparing for the case is, and I didn't see it addressed in the briefs, which doesn't mean it might not have been, but the question that came to my mind is, there are some offenders for whom the only treatment available is through the prison system, as odd as that sounds. There are those offenders. So what is a circuit court judge to do in that case?
In that case, I don't think COMPAS should be entering into the courts. Whether or not they need treatment is something the trial court always looks at. And whether or not that treatment should be in an incarcerated or should be outside is something the trial court looks at. But COMPAS, due to its errors, and I'm not contesting whether or not COMPAS is valid or not, it's that it creates constitutional due process issues when the trial court is using it in sentencing. And therefore, it should not be considered. DOC can and does use it for treatment.
I think you said a minute ago, could be considered for treatment.
Yeah, I think that's more DOC is going to consider how the person ought to be treated. Generally, the trial court would say, this person needs treatment and has to be in prison, and then DOC would decide what that treatment ought to be.
I think I heard you to say a few minutes ago, and maybe I'm wrong, that the circuit court, you're not arguing that the circuit court could not use it for purposes of trying to help figure out what the treatment needs are.
It could look at the COMPAS is divided into two different things. There's the risk, and that's what we're focused on, and then there's the whole second section that involves a lot more questions. It's criminogenic needs that DOC generally uses. You know, does this person have a substance abuse problem? Does he have, a sex assault problem? Those are all separate questions. I do not think that the trial court ought to be using any of those risk scales, and it shouldn't be using anything from COMPAS to say that this person ought to be in jail, in prison, or not in prison.
Counsel?
Okay, I'll take one more try, but if you don't want to answer my question, just tell me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Can the circuit court, in your estimation, can the circuit court take notice of the information in regard to treatment and consider it when fashioning an appropriate sentence?
I think it can take notice of the non-risk things and say this person has these issues the same way
okay.
it would with a PSI.
Okay. Thank you.
Counsel, I personally find this case to be a tough one. I understand your argument and find it really interesting. I think this is tougher than it just might seem on paper. So I put that out there just to let you both know that I'm working through this issue. You know, having done a number of sentencings at the federal level, sometimes the sentencing hearings are as long as the trial because you go through and people really do try to figure out where the person ends up on the point system. That's how it worked when I was there, right, among other things. Because it directly relates to where they end up in terms of a sentence, or it did when I was there. Okay? So almost anything was up for grabs, and cross-examination and determinations made on where you fit within the spectrum. At the trial court level, having done hundreds, probably thousands of sentencings, people can also find their way through arguing which parts they want to disagree with. Sometimes defendants have their own sentencing memorandum, sometimes the court has its own, because the PSI is a court order, not the state's sentencing recommendation. And then you sort of work through that and figure out where the sticking points are. If I hear your argument here, you're saying for purposes of a trial, that is incarceration, your first prong is incarceration, can't use this. It can't come in at all. And right now, top of my head, I'm not thinking of ways this comes in. I know this is a long question, but I want to get you to where I am so you can help me figure out the answer. And I understand that. In 980s, for example, you have all sorts of razors and different things, but they're subject to cross-examination at a trial to determine in the first instance if the person goes to the next stage of where they go, which is kind of like sentencing in a 980. Different animal, I understand that. That's part of your logic on the incarceration kind of idea, I think. Unless you're subject to cross-examination, you really can't just introduce this. Here, you're saying the judge did something wrong by relying on it. Judges are given an incredible amount of discretion as to things they can take into consideration. They can take into consideration all sorts of factors, even unproven offenses, read-in offenses, all sorts of things in reaching their conclusion. How do we know the judge went too far here in determining that looking at this pushed the sentence to a different place and did so inappropriately? Do you see the distinction that I'm making?
Your
argument, but how do we know here this translates into a bad sentence?
I'm trying to figure out which question.
I know it's a lot
okay.
of stuff, but
so
I thought
mean,
I'd throw it out there.
Yes,
so
the
you
trial
can
court
see
has the trial court has extremely broad discretion on how to fashion the sentence and on what to rely upon, which is what comes in on the whole thing with the read in and outright dismissed that the Court of Appeals didn't consider. The trial court still, however, can't rely upon improper things, such as race, gender, and those are what we argued. Here, the trial court specifically said that I'm ruling out probation because of the seriousness of your crime and because of your history, all things that are legitimate, your history on supervision, and the risk assessment tools that have been utilized. So that first step on whether or not Mr. Loomis belonged in prison, belonged in local jail, belonged on probation, the judge used what I've argued is an improper factor. if he dropped that all out of here and never mentions it, we wouldn't be here, at least on that issue. So that's how, and there were a couple other references. That's how I believe the evidence sits that the judge did indeed rely upon it, because he used it as a basis for whether or not Mr. Loomis ought to get probation for these two charges.
So if the exact same sentence were given without those words uttered by the judge in that place, then it'd be okay.
Yes, I would not be here. I've got tons of cases where Compass is used and a judge never refers to it.
So the referral alone, I'm trying to figure out what you want us to write. You want us to write that at sentencing, referring to the Compass is prohibited. You can have it attached to the PSI. It can be referenced by other people. But the moment the judge utters those words, that sentence has to be, that sentence is not going to withhold scrutiny.
Yes.
Withstand.
Let me follow up on that, because I didn't understand your argument to be that broad, especially in response to Justice Gableman's question. I hear Justice Ziegler's question is, you can't use the word compass or risk assessment tool at all, and you said yes. And yet I understood your more nuanced response to Justice Gableman to be that you can use it, but only for certain purposes. So help me understand your position.
Compass has two different parts to it. It has, if you've looked at either materials or the actual PSI, which finally got filed with the court, there are these broad graphs, but there's the risk assessment, and that's what the court here focused on. It's the risk assessment that I find most troubling based upon all of our arguments in here.
How do we know that's the part the judge relied on?
Because he said we based upon the risk assessment tools. The other part are criminogenic needs on what that type of person needs for treatment and supervision, which is what DOC originally was using this for and what it originally was developed for, which was to help Departments of Corrections, and it also is used for other, like, pre-sentence purposes. But Department of Corrections to say, we have people that fit into these type of categories that from studies show they need this type of treatment or that type of treatment. So therefore, we allocate resources for that. Or on extended supervision, all things that have a different and a lower level of due process and whether or not somebody ought to be in prison and for how long they ought to be in prison.
So just to harken back a little bit to Justice Gableman's question, if I as a judge were sentencing someone and I said I need to consider the gravity of the offense, the character of the offender, the need to protect the public, and in reviewing the PSI and its attachments, I determine that the placing you on probation and allowing you to be in the community will not adequately meet your needs. That would be okay because I don't reference the razor, even though it's the compass, even though it's the compass that says you can only get this treatment in prison?
That's the same thing the PSI does. It says this person has these needs. If that's helping the agent say this person has needs, that's different than saying, and it specifically says it shouldn't, the risk evaluation part should not be used for whether or not they ought to be in prison or for the length of the prison.
Okay, I'm not going to take up all the time here, but
okay,
what I'm really
fine.
Wondering then is if the PSI gets it from the compass, can you rely on the PSI?
If the PSI explains what it is that the agent is thinking, yes. I mean, that's part of the problem here is materials inputted in, and it comes out with some risk scores. When an agent sits down and interviews at length the defendant, the victim, family members, and says, here's the history, here's the criminal history, here's why I think this, if there's a mistake in there, the defendant can say, one, there's a mistake, or your conclusion's wrong, but they can't say that with these risk values.
Let me just make sure I understand your answer. If the PSI references and relies on the compass, can the court rely on the PSI? Pre-sentencing investigation.
If it's relying on the treatment parts, I don't have an issue with that. I do not think that it should rely upon the risk parts That's where the most problematic things are coming from. And that's what the court was looking at on whether or not he belonged in prison.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Counsel, the PSI report has what I would expect appropriately labeled as boilerplate language. And on page 14 of that report, it references COMPASS and alternative screenings. In the second to the last paragraph from the bottom, it says in part, for purposes of evidence-based sentencing, actuarial assessment tools are especially relevant to, number one, identify offenders who should be targeted for interventions, number two, identify dynamic risk factors to target with conditions of supervision. Number three, now I want to emphasize this, it is very important to remember that risk scores are not intended to determine the severity of the sentence or whether an offender can be incarcerated. Is your position other than what is set forth in this admonition?
The trial court should not rely upon those for those reasons, yes. And for all the, and then we obviously expanded upon in the argument section why it shouldn't, but this is being given to the trial courts, and through no fault of the trial judge is being told, you know, this is scientific, this is a better way of doing it, and it's actually misleading to tell them this and then give it to them and expect them to then ignore it. Most of the current Court of Appeals cases, including one that's on petition and in abeyance, are where the defendants complain the trial judge didn't go along with a lower risk. But for to expect a trial judge who's handed a piece of paper says this person's a high risk, and then to disagree with that, I don't know in human nature how you're going to do that. So it's misleading, and it also violates due process for the reasons that I said. It just shouldn't be there.
Is it your position that the actual assessment instrument, boy, that's a fancy term, the pieces of paper that are the COMPASS report should not be attached to the pre-sentence report, should not be provided to the court? Is that your position?
The risk assessment scale is correct, yes. I mean, there's other parts of it that says this person has these type of needs, and that can all go in. I mean, there are other ways of doing that also. I mean, but this is the agent. The other parts are much more narrative. For instance, if you turn to, I can't read with glasses on.
There, do you want mine?
So if you turn to page 3 of 6 under criminal opportunity, so you've got different scores and the agent's giving a narrative there based upon both the scores and what this all means. Whereas with the risk scores, all you're getting is, and those are at page, well, it's page 1 of 2. It's the last, I think it's the second to last page. You've got a bar chart that says this guy's a high risk without telling him anything. And it's based upon, as my expert testified, without any contradiction, the expert testified was based upon only 3 factors. The state.
It was based upon what?
3 factors. Age at first offense, current age, and criminal history. The state didn't, not the AGs, but the district attorney didn't cross-examine on them, but now on appeal raised that there are some other issues. Even the guide itself just gives 2 other factors. If I can find my notes. The other 2 factors, which are at, in the guide, is that employment status and prior parole revocations. Our expert testified this is just too limited information to determine the risk. We also don't know how it's weighted, and there's the whole constitutional issues that I raised in terms of gender, and it's not an individualized sentence. It's comparing Mr. Loomis or any other defendant to the study group that North Point had, and it's saying, based upon that study group, which so far hasn't been cross-validated in Wisconsin, he has a higher or a lower risk. Or another defendant down the street at Dane County, based upon those factors, has a lower risk. And the judge, you know, sees, okay, lower risk, fine. Those are all problematic. And we don't know how in the world that's all weighted. There is no way for a defendant to go and say, I got a high risk, that can't possibly be right. As opposed to when the agent writes a PSI and says, I've interviewed him, I've done this investigation, he's got this history. Based upon all that, he is a high risk. It's just this raw score sitting there. We don't know how it's weighted. It has the gender issue that I'll get into if you want.
Can the PSI writer look at this and just and make the PSI writer's recommendations but just not attach it? And that kind of bothers me too, just so you know, because then they're really looking at something that they're not telling anybody about, and you can't even argue about it.
Well, I mean, can the PSI writer write a PSI, never mention Compass, but have used Compass?
Or looked at it, reviewed it.
Well, they would have had it given.
Wanted to confirm their notions of where they should end up.
I don't think so, because then we've lacked even more transparency. Although the defense will know, as long as the defendant communicates with his or her attorney, that he was given this test and can raise that issue that just wasn't raised. The idea is that sentencing, you have a due process right to be sentenced upon accurate information. You have a due process right to be able to access that information and know what it is. And the judge ought to know what it is, too. Here, nobody knows how this stuff is being weighted. It's not just the defendant. It's the court. Even the Compass writers don't know how it's – I'm sorry. Even the DOC agents don't know how it's rated. I cited to a DOC bulletin that they can't answer the question of what's the weight of any specific question or how does it affect the assessment. It's too much secret information.
Who gets it? When a Compass is done, who gets it?
With a PSI, it's a – so in a sentencing – because it is used for other purposes. So in a sentencing...
When is the Compass done?
It's done with the PSI, at
Never
least for
before.
A sentencing. It is done in other cases. It's being used in Dane County for drug court. It is used in some counties for pre-sentence matters. It is used by DOC when they get to prison, I believe. It's also used by DOC before they leave for prison. But in terms of the sentencing, it is done when the judge orders that a PSI be done, and the agent, in doing the PSI, also gives the questions to the defendant, plugs them in, and generates the Compass and attaches it.
Now, originally, Compass was designed for the entire criminal situation. And it was going to follow, as my understanding, Compass is going to follow from pre-trial all the way through the Department of Corrections. Is that right? Am I right about that?
I'm unaware of it being used in that broader scope that it was supposed to follow from pre-trial. It is used in some counties, not all of them, for pre-trial purposes. Milwaukee uses a different, I think it's the Arnold Foundation for pre-trial.
I understand that, but the point of the matter is it is being used and can be used for other parts of the trial or pretrial. All right.
Yes, that's definitely correct, Your Honor, and we are not in any way contesting the use of it in any of those other manners.
All right. But you are contesting it for purposes of whether the person is going to be in prison, in confinement, right?
Correct.
Now, we got a copy of the PSI, which is confidential, right? And attached to the PSI is a Compass report. Now, it seems to me what you don't want to happen is that the judge looks at the Compass but doesn't say a word.
Correct. I think it ought to be dropped out of there completely because it's giving misleading information to the judge.
Right. But your position here started with gender, right?
One of the positions, yes.
Is gender. What's
gender
the other
and also that there's inaccurate and non-individualized sentence, yes.
Right. And the fact that you cannot cross-examine Compass, right?
Correct.
Because it's proprietary.
Yes.
And no one can come and tell you all the things that go into it because it's a secret. Right? So what's your strongest argument?
I think the strongest argument, well, the three of them are all similar in strength. The constitutional due process violations, the use of gender. The judge doesn't even know that gender is being used, and it is being used because you can't have the risk assessment for recidivism without it. It also is not an individualized sentence. A defendant is being sentenced based upon showing up with similar qualities as some other group. And those, I think, are the two strongest, and I've got concerns with the lack of transparency, that nobody knows other than North Point how those factors are weighted. But I think the gender creates a clear constitutional due process issue.
So if this PSI made no reference to Compass, if Compass was not attached as to the risk probability, and it's a two-year, the theory is that is he likely to offend within the first 2 years, right?
It is that people in that group with those characteristics have a higher or lower risk within only 2 years of recidivism.
Okay. So if the Compass was torn into, I say half, and you neither the PSI writer nor the court saw the part relating to risk, would this be an okay sentence? Is that what you want?
Yes. Leaving aside the issue, which is in the briefs, about the problem with the dismissed but read in charges.
Right. We're not talking. We haven't
just
gotten.
Leave that aside. Yes. If that was not an issue, it's clearly within the scope of the judge. However, a judge, and I'm hitting red lights, I'll finish. A judge can give sentence A and rely upon completely proper factors, and a judge can give sentence B but have relied upon improper factors. We can't, for constitutional purposes, allow cases where a judge has relied upon improper factors.
One of the problems we have, I'm sorry, Dave. One of the problems we have is studies show a judge's intuition, a judge's experience, or anybody's experience, they're not very accurate in terms of what's going to happen, right?
Just by itself, intuition alone often can have issues.
Yeah,
but giving so-called better scientific data that isn't giving the right information to the judge doesn't help that. And a PSI should be helping the judge on saying these are the factors that you might not be aware of.
Well, your argument tends to say, oh, we got to leave the status quo. You know, evidence-based practices, really research-based practices. That's what the real better terminology is, but it started as evidence-based. It's too hard to change it to research-based. And the concept is when you get new research, you put in new research into the court system, right?
Right, which may be fine for a scientific study, but if that's including issues that are constitutionally infirm, that should not be used. I don't have any problem necessarily with Compass. I don't have a problem. There's nothing wrong with being proprietary, because business should have stuff that's proprietary if it's a trade secret. But we don't have the transparency, and the judges, by using it, are relying upon incomplete and constitutionally infirm information.
Justice Prosser, I think, had a question for you.
You look like kind of a youngster to me.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Watch out now.
Did you practice when there were sentencing guidelines in place?
I practiced in civil practice when there were sentencing guidelines in place. I've been doing criminal, I think, about 5 or 6 years.
Are you familiar with the sentencing guidelines?
Yes.
My recollection is, and help me if I'm wrong, that you had charts for different offenses, and you would evaluate the seriousness of an offense and the history and the sort of the seriousness of the offender. And then wherever those things matched up, you get a suggested sentence based on what all kinds of other judges had done in similar circumstances. How is Compass different, or would you object to sentencing guidelines? Let's put it that way.
I think sentencing guidelines have all sorts of other issues and took discretion away from judges, and I am not at all well-versed enough to have a lengthy discussion on sentencing guidelines, but there were reasons why we went away from them, and they were the legislature saying, in most cases, this is what we think ought to be done. Compass is just, the compass that's being relied on here is just a bar that says high risk, low risk. It's not even giving the judges that information. You still, with the PSI, and what the judge ought to have, and sometimes the defense does an alternative PSI, is to get as much information as possible that is accurate and proper for a judge to rely upon so the judge can properly sentence within his or her discretion.
The judge isn't bound by Compass, is he or she?
No, but the judge, and but it's the same as a judge can't use race, gender, ethnic origin either, and if the judge does, it's improper. And to the extent Compass is doing that, at least with gender, and it's not for the other reasons I say, the judge is relying upon improper information on using Compass for that. Instead of both sides knowing what is in front of the judge and giving all of this, and the judge, PSI writer before Compass, and still to a certain extent, says, I've done this interview, I've gathered this information, this person is a high risk, I recommend this sentence. The DA does something similar. If there's a defense PSI, they go through and do something similar. You're getting all that information in front of the judge. It's all proper information as long as nobody says he ought to be sentenced because he's of X race or something to that effect. That's all proper, and then the judge uses the judge's discretion to fashion the proper sentence.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Christine Remington, and I represent the state of Wisconsin in this matter. The state asked this court to affirm the circuit court's order denying Mr. Loomis's post-conviction motion.
All right, I'm not going to let you get too far because I just want to put this out there. And Mr. Rosenberg, if you come back up and if you disagree, please let me. I'm interested in the practical ramifications here of how a compass is used. First off, is it used uniformly throughout the state?
Yes, it's the statewide.
When does someone order a compass and who gets it once it's ordered? I'm interested in transparency. What I don't want is for a judge to have this, counsel to have this, the PSI writer to have it, and the rule of this case becomes you can have it, just don't reference it. I mean, it'd be better to have everyone reference it and argue about the merits of the compass than it would be to have everyone have it and then pretend they don't. So tell me how it works as a practical matter so we know what we're dealing with. I mean, you can't pretend you don't have something that you do have, and it's better for a judge and others to reference things so people can argue about it than to have them have access to it and pretend they don't.
I agree, and the state's position is that judges should have access to the compass and should be allowed to reference it as one of the many sentencing factors considered at sentencing. How it works, I believe DOC uses it through the whole an offender's life cycle.
Yeah, but DOC doesn't order it. When does it get ordered, and who gets a copy? Because I know how that stuff usually works. This I don't know. And is that uniform throughout the state?
That I'm not sure the answer to that. I know that at least in La Crosse County they use it for bail decisions after arrest. They'll have a compass prepared. So that
what I'm hearing, at least from the questions from the bench, is it's not used uniformly and it's not ordered uniformly. So that's another part of this equation. If one person is subject to it and another person isn't, how do you know who gets it and who doesn't and when and who has access to it and who doesn't?
As far as sentencing, it's part of every PSI statewide that DOC prepares. And that's a uniformity that how his PSI was prepared in Loomis's case, where the compass was referenced throughout the document, That was a uniform practice
so
at the time.
So if a compass is ordered earlier on in the litigation, that just gets attached. It's not done again at sentencing. And if a compass isn't ordered earlier on, it is then done if a PSI is ordered in a felony case.
That's I believe, how it works. I haven't looked into exactly how the compass is used by DOC throughout the offender's life cycle. I know that DOC's intention is to use it from arrest till discharge. As far as when I was preparing for this, I was focused on how it's used at sentencing. So
I put you on the spot.
I don't want
to. If someone knows the answer, it'd be helpful, I think.
Yeah, I don't want to say something that I'm not sure is right. But I know that compass can be prepared at any point. I mean, compass is a 137-question document, and about a third of the questions are questions that are used, historical documents are used to fill in the answers, you know, the date of first arrest, the age of first arrest. Then another section is an interview the agent has with the defendant about asking questions, and another section is sort of a fill-in-the-blank bubbles that the defendant fills out on their own. And I know that that can be done at any time. And I believe that
can a defendant refuse to do it?
What?
Can a defendant refuse to do it?
I believe so.
And then it's not really court-ordered? Or it's court-ordered, but a defendant can say, I'm not going to do it?
I believe that the first chunk can be done no matter what, the historical one that the agent can do, and that I think is done in all situations. I think defendants can refuse to cooperate.
Looking back at the sentencing in this case and the reference to compass, which is less than one sentence, should we take it into account, all of the other things the judge looked at, or once he says, I relied on compass at all? Is that just poison the whole sentencing?
I think a judge can say, I relied on compass. Courts at sentencing must consider the need to protect the public and the rehabilitation needs of a defendant. And in order to consider those things, they need to assess risk. How risky is this person if I release him into the public? And to assess a risk of a person in front of you requires circuit courts to make assumptions. And I think there was a question about how courts are notoriously bad at making those assumptions. And so compass provides relevant information to circuit courts about the risk this person presents. And the state's position is obviously not that compass should control sentencing at all, but that it is one thing that a court can look at in determining the risk of the person sitting in front of them if they're released into the public, and also the needs of that person and the ability of that person to change.
How do we thread the needle? This is my problem. You say it can be used. The instrument itself says it shall. Well, it is very important to remember that risk scores are not intended to determine the severity of the sentence or whether an offender is incarcerated. Is it your position that risk scores can be used to determine the severity of the sentence?
I don't think that risk scores should be used to determine the severity of the sentence. I agree with that statement that is in every PSI that uses the compass. But what I think risk scores can be used as part of the risk assessment in order to sentence a defendant. We don't want courts to say this person in front of me is a 10 on compass as far as risk, and therefore I'm going to give them the maximum sentence.
Yeah. This is the problem. It seems to me you're agreeing with the admonition set forth by the pre-sentence report, the DOC, and as I understand it, it is standard. Important. Don't use it to determine the severity of the sentence or whether a defendant is to be incarcerated. Why? They don't give all the reasons, but I suppose you're in big trouble if you do. You've got problems if you do. And yet, it is clear that one of the touchstones of a sentence analysis has to be the protection of the public.
the severity of the offense, right, in addition to the rehabilitative needs of the accused, but the protection of the public. How can I, a mere mortal, generally, how can I say, okay, I can't use it to determine incarceration, I can't use it to determine the severity of this sentence. I am mandated to consider the protection of the public, mandated, and I look at this chart, and if the pictures say 1,000 words, because there are no words other than the picture here, violent recidivism risk, 10 on a scale of 10, you know. General recidivism risk, high. Pretrial release risk, high as you can get. There's no way, if I'm concerned about the protection of the public and I see this picture and no words, that has to influence me.
I don't read the admonition that you're reading that's saying risk score should not be used to determine the sentence as narrowly as you're reading it.
Well, I'm just reading the words. It says it's very important to remember that risk scores are not intended to determine the severity of the sentence whether an offender is incarcerated.
I agree, and I think that what that is saying is that courts should not look at that bar chart and decide based on that alone that this person should be incarcerated. I believe that warning is saying this is one piece of your puzzle. This alone is not your answer to determine the severity of the sentence and whether someone should be incarcerated, but that it is one piece of the puzzle to consider, because absolutely, courts need to assess the risk of this person if this person is released into the public and whether that places the public at risk. And courts do that assessment in their head. Courts weigh different factors. There's case law very settled case law that says the weight attributed to each sentencing factor is not something the court needs to articulate.
You know, counsel, one of your comments about what you just said about one piece of the puzzle, I'd like you to step back here a second and help me and perhaps other members of the bench understand precisely the procedure that's followed with Compass. You started in response to the first question from Justice, first most recent series of questions from Justice Bradley. You made the comment, every PSI that uses Compass, do I infer correctly from that Compass will only be used as part of the preparation of a pre-sentence investigation?
That it will only be used then? No.
No, I mean, that's true. When it comes to sentencing. In other words, a court getting a Compass report at the sentencing hearing or shortly before the sentencing hearing does just receive a Compass report, or will it always be accompanied by, I'm looking at the document that's in front of us. Your opposing counsel made reference to page 1 out of 2 in regard to where it lists high, and then Justice Bradley was asking you questions about the bar. I noticed that there's 16 pages of narrative that come before that, and that's part of what most of us, those of us who are trial court judges, would recognize as a traditional pre-sentence investigation report. So my question to you, phrased most pointedly, is at the time of sentencing, and I'm not talking about early release or release on bond or any other use, but at the time of sentencing, when the court gets the Compass report, will it always be accompanied by similar narrative or a more traditional pre-sentence investigation?
The short answer is yes. Right now, while this case is pending, DOC, I believe, is not attaching PSI, not including Compass in PSIs
now.
But before this, the way that it was working is the Compass was incorporated into the PSI in the manner in this case where there's the narrative, there's the bar charts, but then there's narrative right along with it.
When you say one piece of the puzzle, what I infer you're talking about is the court is going to read through, in this instance, 16 pages of narrative detailing all of the things that a traditional pre-sentence investigation report, all the interviews that the author from the Department of Corrections views as appropriate, usually parents, siblings, close friends, close relatives, employers, and go through all the narrative history of the employment history as well as the criminal record. And you're saying, when you use the phrase, one piece of the puzzle, you're saying after the judge reads the pre-sentence, studies the pre-sentence report, looks through the file in the case, all the other information that's contained within the record, and then takes a look at the bar chart. Having been a trial court judge for 6 years, I can't imagine an instance where I would just flip to the back of the page, and I would doubt any trial court judge in this state would just flip to this bar chart and say, oh, well, some author thinks that there's a high probability of overall risk potential for violent recidivism, general recidivism. I'm going to look, and I wager to bet every judge in the state is going to read the pre-sentence investigation and then determine for him or herself whether these bar charts and whether the description of high, low, medium, highly probable squares with his or her own understanding based on everything else they've read. I think that's what you mean.
Yeah, the state's position is that's absolutely what should happen at sentencing.
And you don't dispute. I don't think the state disputes, and I think you've said it once or twice, that this sort of bizarro world scenario that I outlined where a judge just gets this entire document, just says, no, I'm not interested in the first 16 pages of the narrative history. I just want to go to page 1 out of 2, and I want to look at this bar chart, and I want to see if, in the opinion of this author, this guy has a high criminogenic need as a result of criminal involvement. You do not dispute that that would be an improper use of the report in fashioning a sentence.
I agree with that. That would, courts in exercising discretion at sentencing could not just consider that one item. There are many factors that a circuit court needs to consider at sentencing to protect the public, to rehabilitate the defendant, and the severity of the offense. All of those things need to be considered.
Those things would be considered on review as applying Galleon and all of its progeny to the standards to determine whether the court did exercise the discretion properly.
Yes, and that's what I was saying earlier in response to the question about that admonition that the risk score should not determine the sentence. The risk score alone should not determine the sentence of an offender. But that's not the same thing as whether the risk score is relevant to circuit courts in sentencing.
How do we know, and just for the record, you have the pre-sentence, which is 18 pages long, but doesn't have any narrative about the compass. Then you have a document that is 6 pages long that is the narrative assessment, but really only has a narrative about the criminogenic needs. And then you have a document, so that's 6 pages narrative about criminogenic needs. And then you have a 2-page document which has the bar charts. So the narrative about the compass is separate from the pre-sentence investigation. That's what the record is. Is that correct?
They're all included together, but it's...
Yes, but they're...
Yeah. In this case, that's how it was done. I believe after Mr. Loomis's sentencing and before this case was certified, the way DOC was using it was much more of an integrated system where there would be a symbol next to, there'd be the narrative from the agent, but then there'd be a symbol next to things that came from Compass, and it was incorporated throughout the document more than it was
in this
case.
And this is very discreet, 18-page pre-sentence, 6-page narrative that doesn't deal with narrative of the risk, only the criminogenic, and then the 2-page bar document. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think one of the important things to note here, too, is that this is evidence-based research. This is not some magic formula. This is a system that has been peer-reviewed in scientific literature to be proven more accurate than judges' assessment of risk alone. And Loomis doesn't challenge that any of these questions or any of the factors that Compass is considering are irrelevant. All of the things it asks are things that courts consider at sentencing. And that so the input is fine, and the output on risk is a very relevant consideration for circuit courts when assessing the length of a defendant's sentence. And I think it's important to note that this system that Compass is, scientists have studied whether this is an accurate prediction of risk and that it is more accurate than judges alone. But it alone isn't 100% accurate. That's why the state's position is that Compass should be considered along with court's professional judgment and experience to fashion an appropriate sentence.
I believe in trust but verify, and I certainly believe in trust but verify when it really affects so many people's lives and the consequences that inaccurate information would have on the people of the state for sentencing. So it bothers me a lot that there is no real verification or not traditional verification. Don't subject me to cross-examination. This is proprietary. Can't tell you really how it's weighed. Trust me. And I say, yeah. No.
Well, the developers of Compass aren't just asking you to trust them. Mm-hmm. They've taken their risk assessment tool, they've applied it to offenders, and then there's been peer-reviewed literature published on watching those offenders and seeing if Compass properly assessed.
It's gone both ways, as I understand some of the articles I've read.
Yes. But, as far as the potentially inaccurate information, a defendant has the ability to challenge any of the input into any of these questions that are asked. And the output is an assessment of risk. By itself, it's a prediction. It's not a guarantee of any sort of outcome. A prediction is something that might happen.
One of the articles I read, and I can't put my finger on it necessarily right now, this one, speaks of the importance of this underlying data, whatever it is and however it's weighed, that we kept up and to be contemporaneous, and that it be focused on the population that is subject to the instrument's assessment. And as I understand it, there has been no information from the state of Wisconsin that is incorporated in this proprietary formula.
Well, there's no evidence that Wisconsin offenders are different than offenders in the whole United States. And the tool, the DOC plans to verify it and use it with the Wisconsin population, but in order to do that, you can't start that off right away. And because the first people who take the Compass, you have to have a norm group to compare them to. And in Wisconsin, when we first use this tool, we have to use the nationwide norm group.
How long have we been using Compass?
I don't have that answer in front of me.
May I ask, Mr. Loomis contends that Compass violates due process because it includes a consideration of gender. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think there's some misunderstanding about how Compass considers gender. It's not something that's considered at any point along the way in Compass until you're looking at comparing this offender to the group of like offenders and placing and assessing their risk. And it's only at that point where you take the person in front of you and you want to compare them to someone the group most like them. And in that situation, that's when DOC compares women to women and men to men. That's the only way that Compass considers gender. And the due process claim based on gender is that there's case law out there that says that a defendant cannot be sentenced based on their gender. This indirect consideration in Compass to develop a risk score of this person is not a consideration of gender. This person is not being sentenced because they're a man or sentenced because they're a woman. Compass indirectly considers it when comparing the person in front of them to the group of like offenders, and that's the consideration of gender here. So it's comparing, it's assessing the person's risk based on other men and other women. It's not the person, Mr. Loomis wasn't sentenced because he's to a longer sentence because he's a man.
Well, could this produce a more serious sentence for one gender than another?
Well, I don't think that it would, no. I think that what happens, because what happens in this situation is that because courts are required to consider risk of the person in front of them, and we have no idea how the weighing of factors in circuit court's heads while you're trying to consider these things, this is only a number on a page that may or may not slightly change between whether this is a man or a woman, and then that is one piece of the puzzle that the court would consider in fashioning a sentence. The court is not sentencing someone because they're a man, and I don't think you could ever have a situation where you could say this person has a longer sentence because they're a man or a woman because of all of the factors that circuit courts consider in sentencing someone. And as I said in my brief, it actually is, by comparing Mr. Loomis to other men, it actually lowered his risk because men are a higher risk in general than it would have. He came out with a lower risk to reoffend by comparing him only to men than he would have if you compared him to both genders. So in this situation, it actually dropped his risk.
But the stereotype that is at play here is, one, men are more violent generally than women offenders, right?
Yeah, and the evidence bears that out. That's as long as they've been keeping statistics, men violently.
So that's the stereotype.
Can I just verify something? You agreed with the proposition that this sentence is based on a stereotype. No judge is going to want a sentence based on a stereotype. So if you really are agreeing to that, you might as well sit down.
No, I'm not. I'm not agreeing that the sentence is based on a stereotype. I'm. She was asking me a question about the...
She is Justice Abrahamson.
Justice
you
Abrahamson.
You know that, Ms. Remington. Go
yes.
ahead.
Justice Abrahamson had asked me a question about that men violently offended a greater rate than women.
But that's the theory mm-hmm. on which Compass is based. Men are more violent than women. And what's the other gender-based theory? They're more violent and they're more apt to reoffend, right, than women?
In certain types of offenses. I think that the way that the science has bared out that there are certain types of offenses or certain types of female offenders that are more likely to offend based on it. But, yes, Compass is using group data to come up with these risk assessment
tools. And the group
tools.
Data is gender-based.
And the group data can be gender-based. It's based on it's not just based on one thing. It's based on many different factors that are weighed together, and it wouldn't be and I certainly wouldn't say that courts can sentence based on stereotypes, but that this risk assessment tool provides evidence that the court can use and along with the court's professional judgment to fashion a sentence that protects the public and addresses the needs of a defendant. And addresses the seriousness of the offense.
Well, I think we might have been getting a little far afield there. I think the small point, what you're trying to make, is I hear it, but we get distracted by discussion of stereotypes and theories. The small point, as I understand you're trying to make it, is that Compass compares members of the male gender to offender populations, those who have by definition committed and have been convicted of criminal activity, to other male offenders. Well, it does the same for members of the female gender. And so that's all I took away from the briefs. And certainly we can trail off into many different discussions about, well, the female population represents, I think the last time I read the statistics, 1% of our prison population, something like that. But the small point you're trying to make is that they're trying to compare similar offenders to similar offenders. And obviously at time of sentencing, the sentencing court is going to be aware which gender the person they're sentencing is part of.
Yes, and I'm saying that because Compass uses compares similar offenders to similar offenders in assessing risk, and that indirectly addresses gender. That does not mean that due process is implicated in this case because no offenders are being sentenced because they're a man or because they're a woman.
Counsel, hot off the press, I have a Notre Dame Law Review by University of Wisconsin Law School professor Cecilia Klingel. And I don't know if you've had an opportunity to review that, but regardless, I want to, it is this article that I referred to earlier, and I'm reading from page 142 of Notre Dame, most recent. It says, in the main, advocates have been reticent to acknowledge the paucity of reliable evidence that now exists. Now, this is the sentence I'm getting to that's important to me. Unless criminal justice system actors are made fully aware of the limits of the tools they are being asked to implement, they are likely to misuse them. And then it goes on to say, in the next paragraph, moreover, to retain their accuracy, risk instruments must be constantly renormed for the changing populations and sub-populations. I want to focus on unless criminal justice system actors are made fully aware of the limits of the tools they are being asked to implement, they are likely to misuse them. If we were writing an opinion and wanted to advise the judges of the limits of the tools they are being asked to implement, lest they likely be misused, what are those limits that we should be advising judges of vis-a-vis sentencing?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind when you ask that question is that this risk assessment score is not a guarantee of an outcome. That by even if this person comes out at a high risk of reoffend, all that means is that people who share the characteristics of that person have in the past reoffended at a high rate. It is not a guarantee of an outcome of what the person in front of them is going to do. And that's where they need to courts would need to consider other things, including their experience. And that while this has been peer-reviewed by scientific literature, COMPASS has that it's been peer-reviewed to be an accurate tool and to be more accurate than judges' assessments alone. It is not a guarantee of any sort of outcome. And it's also not a prediction of a percentage risk. If someone comes out at a 5, that doesn't mean it's a flip of a coin. What that means is that people that share the characteristics of that defendant have offended at a rate of half of them have reoffended and half have not.
Counsel, finally, in terms of the limitations, you have read a word into the admonition given in the pre-sentence report about being careful in the use, lest it be misused, of the COMPASS instrument. And you said that it really means it's very important to remember that risk scores alone or are not intended to determine the severity of the sentence or whether an offender is incarcerated. This is written much more broadly. What do you point to support your interpretation that the word alone should be written into that, or that's really what they intended?
Well, I don't think you necessarily have to read that word into that sentence. It says risk scores should not be used to determine sentence. I think the way I read that sentence is that says risk scores should not be the thing you use to determine the sentence.
Or whether an offender is incarcerated.
But courts should consider risk, and part of considering risk, they should look at the COMPASS scores and the COMPASS assessment of the person's risk and compare that with all other factors, all of the judges' expert opinions, and fashion a sentence that the court believes would.
Ms. Remington, if you answered this, I'm sorry, but is the Department of Corrections or some other entity in Wisconsin checking to see whether
Compass is accurate with Wisconsin?
Yes, the Department of Corrections is doing that follow-up with using Compass on the offenders in Wisconsin to come up with that.
But that study hasn't been reported yet?
My understanding is yes, the final information is not.
And when is the study expected?
That I'm not sure.
How long has the study been going on?
I also don't know the answer to that. I do know that that once DOC does that follow-up study, I believe they plan to use the Wisconsin offender group when using Compass in the future, as long as it proves to be valid for that group as well.
I don't understand what you just said, so you have to walk me through that. We're talking here about gender and things that might be due process violations versus the test being reviewed to see if it's accurate. How would you know if it's accurate? I mean, wouldn't you? The statistics that go into that fact are the statistics that come to bear at the time that recommendation in that particular case is made, versus comparing that to several years later evaluating accuracy. The accuracy wouldn't be with respect to gender, would it? I mean, the accuracy would be self-authenticating because you know how many women are in prison, how many men are in prison, for what crimes are in prison, so that's going to be accurate.
I view these claims as different. That what we're talking about is different claims. I think the due process claims that Mr. Loomis is making don't bear on whether Compass is accurate assessment of risk. His position, I believe, I don't want to put words in his mouth,
you know,
is that
I'm sorry.
It's a due process.
I didn't see your red light was on, so I am sorry. I will.
Do you want me to continue?
Question.
I'd like you to answer please.
Because I think that is his argument. One of his arguments is his due process violation because it's based on inaccurate information.
I believe that his argument is that the information about this person's risk is potentially inaccurate. I guess that could relate back to the scientific studies, but my view of the claim he's making is that it doesn't, because Compass is never going to be a 100% guarantee of an outcome, it always has that potential for inaccurately predicting this person's risk. And the state's position is that it's a prediction of something that may happen. It's never purported to be a guarantee of an outcome.
To the extent that the PSI includes reference to the risk assessment of Compass, so you have Compass influencing the PSI person, the person who makes that report, isn't that right?
If the Compass is prepared alongside the PSI and incorporated within, yes. The person who prepares the PSI will have looked at the Compass and used those conclusions
and
to
draw
their
here,
own conclusions.
Right?
That was true here.
Right. So you got the Compass influencing the PSI, and the PSI and Compass then influencing the judge.
Yeah. And the state's position is that Compass is a valid consideration for courts. Thank you.
Thank you. Butler?
Brief rebuttal. First, I'd like to answer Justice Ziegler's question from the beginning, if I can. As far as trial 11 appellate cases, as far as I know, a judge does not order Compass. It isn't any different than it was prior to Compass. A judge orders a PSI to be written. As part of writing the PSI, the DOC agent developed Compass. Now, whether or not they had previously inputted stuff, I don't know, and that may vary from case to case. And here it looks like it was all printed at the same time. As far as I know, prior to this case being certified, DOC used Compass on all the PSIs in recent years, which I believe Attorney Remington also said. There may be a couple judges who don't like Compass who specifically said, I don't want it. But otherwise, without something like that, to my knowledge and my experience, it was used when the PSI was ordered.
So you're not asking us to talk about situations where bail or something like that might, but where does it go? If it's used for bail, the judge must be looking at it.
If it's used in a case for bail for a pre-sentence, yes, a judge looks at it, and I believe.
Not for pre-sentence, bail. When you first see the case, and you're deciding,
if it's used for pretrial release decisions such as bail, then yes, it goes to the judge as far as I know, but I haven't.
And what happens when that judge is sentencing that person? That's really my question.
I don't know the answer to that.
Are you asking them to forget they saw it, or they've got to give it to someone else, or a different judge has to take the case, or you have to recuse yourself?
I have not seen that in any case that I have, and I've not seen that in the literature, so I don't know the answer to that.
But, I mean, what would you be asking for if a judge sees the compass before? Because you're just saying they can't see it. They
should not be taking any of that stuff into consideration for sentencing.
So they would have to specifically say, I've seen it, but I'm not taking it into consideration.
If it looks the same, and I have not seen a bail compass to see what it looks like. So I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to give you an unfair question.
The other thing where I want to get back to, the state, to me, admits that gender is being used here, and without any cite, says how DLC is being used. Our expert testified it is being used, and that seems to be what the state's saying, that you get down to the comparison of the defendant, in this case Mr. Loomis, and he's being compared to males. That, by all the literature, means there's a higher risk score. So he is, in part, getting a higher risk score based on gender, and that's then affecting the judge. And whether or not that's scientifically valid is an academic question, but it's not a...
Unless I misunderstood her, she said the opposite. She said that by comparing a male offender to other male offenders, if he were to compare the male offender to female offenders, then the risk would be that much higher. That's what I heard your opposing counsel to say.
If I'm not mistaken, she said in Mr. Loomis's case, it's lower comparing to males, but just comparing to males by themselves, they have a higher risk level. When you separate them out by gender, males have a higher risk of recidivism than women have. It is somehow taken into account in...
Is that accurate or inaccurate?
It may be accurate scientifically, but it's then using a constitutionally improper, the same way if you had a race or ethnicity that you said, well, I'm going to compare them using this category to this race, because that gives me a more scientifically valid answer, that's also constitutionally improper. The fact that it might be scientifically proper to say that men have a higher risk or this ethnicity has a higher risk may be great in an academic paper, but it doesn't belong being used in the court system, and that's our argument. There are things being used here that are constitutionally invalid, therefore they're improper, and under the whole long line of cases, that's an abuse of discretion because the court is, and in these cases, without even knowing it, considering improper information.
Let me put, instead of men having a higher incarceration rate than women, or recidivism rate than women, let's say we used race and say African Americans have a higher incarceration rate, or because African Americans have a higher incarceration rate, that affects the recidivism rate also. Is that proper to use race? Is that okay to use race?
No, and that's the point I was trying to make. There are certain things that are improper, race, gender, national origin, ethnicity, and the fact that they might be scientifically valid. It might be more scientifically valid that people of a race, African American, you know, white, Asian, whatever, that they have a higher rate of recidivism, and we'd have a better scientific test if we included that standard, is wrong from a constitutional standpoint.
Thank you very much.
It seems to me that your argument there, based on the fact that sentencing is supposed to be individualized, and isn't that your basis for objecting to gender or race?
That's a separate objection. It's long a cornerstone of Wisconsin jurisprudence that the sentences should be individualized. I think that comes out of Galena, if I remember correctly. Gender is a different due process violation. I mean, they're all problems with a non-individualized sentence, but you could still have an individualized sentence where you said, this person is a white guy, and I don't like white guys, so therefore I'm sentencing him more. It's still an individualized sentence, but it's constitutionally wrong.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for fine arguments. Very interesting case with a tool that certainly is new to me. I was never a circuit court judge, so I never had the opportunity to use it, and I've done a lot of reading about it. Very interesting. We're going to take a little bit of a break now. Just going to join us for the next argument. So thank you very much, and we are adjourned.